and is 273 pages long. The following poem appears as an introduction to the book. To the hesitating purchaser, if sailor tales to sailor tunes, storm and adventure, heat and cold, if schooners, islands and maroons and buccaneers and buried gold, and all the old romance retold exactly in the ancient way can please, as me they pleased of old, the wiser youngsters of today, so be it, and fall on. If not, if studious youth no longer crave his ancient appetites forgot, Kingston or Ballantyne the Brave, or Cooper of the Wood and Wave, so be it also, and may I and all my pirates share the grave where these and their creations lie. And now, Treasure Island. Chapter 1. The Old Sea Dog at the Admiral Benbow. Squire Trelawney, Dr. Livesey, and the rest of these gentlemen, having asked me to write down the whole particulars about Treasure Island, from the beginning to the end, keeping nothing back but the bearings of the island, and that only because there is still treasure not yet lifted, I take up my pen, in the year of grace 17, and go back to the time when my father kept the Admiral Benbow Inn, and the brown old seaman, with a saber cut, first took up his lodgings under our roof. I remember him as if it were yesterday, and he came plodding to the inn door, his sea-chest following behind him in a handbarrow, a tall, strong, heavy, nut-brown man, his tarry pigtail falling over his shoulders of his soiled blue coat, his hands ragged and scarred, with black broken nails, and the saber cut across one cheek, a dirty, livid white. I remember him looking round the cove and whistling to himself as he did so, and then breaking out into that old sea song that he sang so often afterwards. 15 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho-ho, and a bottle of rum. In the high old tottering voice that seemed to have been tuned and broken at the capstan bars. Then he rapped on the door with a bit of stick, like a handspike that he carried, and when my father appeared, called roughly for a glass of rum. This, when it was brought to him, he drank slowly, like a connoisseur, lingering on the taste, and still looking about him at the cliffs and up at our signboard. "This is a handy cove," says he at length, "and a pleasant-situated grog shop. Much company, mate." My father told him no, very little company, the more was the pity. "Well, then," said he, "this is the berth for me. Here, you matey," he cried to the man who trundled the barrow. "Bring up alongside and help up my chest. I'll stay here a bit," he continued. "I'm a plain man. Rum and bacon and eggs is what I want. And that head up there to watch ships off. What might you call me? You might call me Captain." "Oh, I see what you're at there." And he threw down 3 or 4 gold pieces on the threshold. "You can tell me when I've worked through that," says he, looking as fierce as a commander. And indeed, bad as his clothes were, and coarsely as he spoke, he had none of the appearance of a man who sailed before the mast, but seemed like a mate or skipper, accustomed to be obeyed or to strike. The man who came with the barrow told us the mail had sent him down the morning before at the Royal George, that he had inquired what inns there were along the coast, and hearing ours well spoken of, I suppose, and described as lonely, had chosen it from the others for his place of residence. And that was all we could learn of our guest. He was a very silent man by custom. All day he hung round the cove or upon the cliffs with a brass telescope. All evening he sat in a corner of the parlor next to the fire and drank rum and water very strong. Mostly he would not speak when spoken to, only look up sudden and fierce and blow through his nose like a foghorn. And we and the people who came about our house soon learned to let him be. Every day, when he came back from his stroll, he would ask if any seafaring man had gone by along the road. At first, we thought it was the want of company of his own kind that made him ask.